हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
हरे कृष्ण Welcome everyone, thank you very much for coming. So, the Bhaktivedanta Academy organized this symposium, this short 4 days conference on Vedic education, trying to share the principles by which this project is based, and the efforts that Maharaj did and many devotees to keep the Vedic education as Srila Prabhupada asked us to establish. So I'll just briefly introduce how the program will work. Basically, we want to do something very interactive, so whatever questions you have, you can make. We are giving this booklet for you. It's just a guide, and also you can take with you, so after the program you can remember what you heard here, what you discussed. But it's not that we're going to follow exactly point by point. It will be a very organic seminar. So whatever questions you have, on the last 2 pages, there's space for making notes. In case you need boards, you can get more, these wooden boards for writing. And it will happen during 4 days. Maharaj will be coming. Of course, we thank Maharaj for giving his time for coming and being here with us, sharing his association. Maharaj will be coming every evening from 4 to 6, where he will explain the concepts and the principles, the practice, whatever. Whatever questions you have, you can bring. And during the morning, we'll have more workshops. It will be more practical things regarding education. So today, Maharaj will give the opening, the concept of Vedic education. This will be a general idea of the Vedic education. Then tomorrow, His Grace Prithivardhan Prabhu, he will speak on the application of the principles of Vedic education. He will bring very practical things you can apply in your lives and realize in terms of education. Then on the next evening, Maharaj will be speaking about the curriculum, how the curriculum for Gurukul is organized. And then the next morning, we will have all teachers of the school speaking about the different subjects we teach in Gurukul, how we teach, and the principles of different subjects we have. And then on the evening, Maharaj will speak about raising Krishna-conscious children, general principles for everything. You see on the topics, there's so many things there. And then on the last day, in the morning session, we'll do a very interactive presentation that will give you a list during this symposium of different activities we can run with you. We will interact with the boys, different services in Gurukul, different classes you want to see, cooking, everything, so you can experience how is Gurukul's life, actually, not only the theory. And then on the evening will be the last session, will be questions and answers, and Maharaj will be here also. His Grace Madhav Gauranga Prabhu, you also come for that. Then whatever questions. You have also at the last session. So thank you very much for coming.
Thank you. Okay, so then we're going on, today's on the concept of Vedic education. So we'll be going along. If you have any questions as we go on the subject, that's directly on the subject, and we'll deal with it now, you know, as we go. If not, then if it's just general things, you wait until that comes up in the topics that you see, or wait until the last day, then when we will just deal with questions and answers on, you know, whatever is relevant to the topic. So the concept of Vedic education, the first part then, is that the goal of Vedic culture is to bring the individual to the platform of Krishna consciousness, and Vedic education is an integral part of this scheme. That the purpose of the Vedic educational program is simply that people become God conscious. There is no other purpose to the Vedic culture. So that's why it's called Brahminical culture, because it's about understanding Brahman. There's not another purpose. Other aspects are there for people who have other desires than that on the path of Krishna consciousness. But factually, the purpose is just to become Krishna conscious. There isn't another purpose. And so then education is very important in that, is without education, then people won't actually know how to traverse this path and go from whatever position of that they are in consciousness to the position of God consciousness. Understand? It doesn't happen just by accident. It happens because there is training, right? And so the better the training, then the better one is able to apply. So the whole idea in the Vedic culture is that if you don't become self-realized, what's the purpose of being a human being? Because eating, sleeping, mating, defending is going on by the animals. We all know this nicely. And generally speaking, they're better at it than we are. We may have some refined elements, but it's not that we enjoy what we eat any better than the animal does. Animal gets whatever it gets. It's really happy. The cow is chewing on its grass. It is very happy. Right? And there's a lot of times we get stuff to eat. We're not so happy. So actually, who's doing better, right? So human life is then meant for self-realization. But it's a program that everybody can become God conscious, but it's geared that everyone's an individual. That's very important. Vedic system is their strict rules, because that's how things work, right? The rules are designed because they're laws of the Lord, laws of God. And so, but the point is the laws have to be applied to the individual. That's the balance. Is that there's a set of rules based on the natural metaphysical laws established by the Lord, but they're applied in such a way that each individual can get the benefit. But the individual has to be interested in gaining that benefit. They only want to make a show of being advanced. Yes, you can do that. But if you actually want to be advanced, that's another point. So, now, when to see that this process goes on in a continuous way, you have to see that it goes on from one generation to the next generation. And so that's only going to happen if the values of this generation are given to the next generation. But the point is, the values of this generation aren't actually from this generation. They're from the Vedic literatures. They're from the Acharyas. They're from Krishna. So unless the values given by Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra are given to the next generation, then the culture will change. That's the whole point, is that whatever culture is there in the world, you see, other than the Vedic culture, they all change. The value's different, everything's different, because the values aren't given to the next generation. And so the culture changes. So in the modern sense, we'll say, yes, that's just the advancement and this and that. They'll have so many reasons to give. But we see is that also so many things that were good are lost. Every generation is talking about how it was better, how it was nicer before. So that means something's being lost. Does this make sense? So the whole idea is that we have to see, how does this come across? How does this go through? So that means the educational system is what has to do that. Other things aren't going to do that. Means yes, by association and all this, but how much time can be given? Right? Parents can give a certain amount of time to the children, but they have so many duties. So when they're very small, yes, very full time is given, because they're always right there. They don't want to go very far. But once they get a little older, then there's other things to do. Right? People are out, they have occupations, they're going out, they're making money, there's things to do around the house. So the amount of time that can be spent won't be so much. Plus you have the aspect of attachment. When there's attachment, there's the idea that things will just happen automatically. Right? I value this. This is my child. I value my child. And naturally the child, being non-different from ourselves, will naturally value what we want. It'll just happen. But the point is it doesn't just happen. One has to have training. Does that make sense? So the idea of the Vedic system is the educational system. They can put in the time, because that is their occupation, right? Because of occupational duties, you can't put as much time into the children. But for teachers in the educational system, that is their occupation. Does that make sense? Therefore, then all day they're involved in this. That's the point. Sometimes it'll be said, no, but the parents, they have more. They don't have the time. Literally. If you think about it, how much time can you put in for your kid every day? We say, okay, now, teach them all these different things. Teach them the English, the math, the history, geography. See that they're doing the sadhana. Seeing that they're reading the books and all that. Then they learn mridanga. They learn cooking. They learn that. And that should happen every day. What's going to happen? You're going to say, it's not possible. I can't fit that into my schedule. Right? So that's why the Vedic system has this whole system where the child, when they're young, they're trained in the house. They pick up that inherent religious values that is there, but they're not trained consciously of them. They catch something, but it depends on the parents how much they give, but basically inherently they'll pick up the religious elements. Then as it goes farther, then the school, then they spend the rest of the time with it. Right? Does that make sense? So that means you can deal with them according to their nature. Now, generally the children will be like their parents. So whatever the parents are, most of the time the children will be basically the same thing. You know, we have the standard saying of the distance that the apple falls off the tree, right? It's not very far, right? But you do have cases where they're not like their parents. So many examples in the Vedic history that they're from one family, but they're quite different, right? Haridas Thakur is a very good example, right? So, therefore, then the educational system has to be able to accommodate that individuality. Because generally in the family, we're going to deal with them because of our attachment. We're attached to them, they should be like us. But in principle of being Krishna conscious, like that, that can happen. But as far as other things go, we might find that that doesn't work so well. Yeah? So that's why then the Vedic system is, according to the nature of the child, that's how they're going to be trained. So the system is very, specific for that. Then, because once they're trained, now the idea is they're trained, they become part of the greater culture of the society. But to do that, you have to actually be removed from that greater culture to take part, to be trained according to your position. Right? Because otherwise you get distracted by all the different things that are going on. And then by being in the school itself, then they can be, it's an environment that's geared for them. Yes, it's made so that the responsibility isn't so great, they don't do something, life goes on. But then the next day, then they'll be expected to do it. And if not the next day, and like that until they finally get it. Right? But at home, then because of the attachment, they don't do it, you get frustrated, you get disturbed, this and that, because that's not what you expect to be doing. But in the Vedic thing is that, no, that's the job of the teacher. That's what they see. They see that this culture is being trained. Okay. So then they can see what is the nature, how to train, how to adjust, and then make everything work. Does that make sense? So then your ideal situation, as is mentioned, then is not in your urban surrounding. Because the urban surroundings, it's the mode of passion, mode of ignorance. People are very busy doing whatever they're doing. Nobody really has the time to get involved. While if you go into the more rural common environment, things are slower. It's at a pace that the children can relate to, and they grow up very nicely. Because the point is if someone's a very solid person, they can function anywhere. Of course, the modern society being very proud of itself and its accomplishments, then the idea is if you don't grow up in it, then you won't know. If you don't do this and that, but guaranteed is that people now are in it like that, like most many of you here. All this new technology is here. I can guarantee that most of you wouldn't have a clue what this new technology is. You have a phone, you can make a phone call, you can do a couple of things on Facebook and this and that. But if you check that 8-year-old, he's doing 10 times the amount of stuff that you're doing with that same phone. And he's doing it, you know, 2 or 3 times quicker, if not more than that. I was shocked. The other day, you get the thing, you're typing like this, right? This cursor I'm seeing is just going like this, you know? And then the next thing, like this. It's just like that. They're typing whole sentences just on that much. I'm amazed. Because they've been doing it since they're like 4 years old. So the whole thing is we can be proud that no, but they won't know and this and that. But the point is people who say that, they're the ones who don't know. Because that's the thing. There's so much going on that one can get distracted and not figure out. So the idea is that if you go into a simpler environment, then you can start to see very easily who you are, what your nature is, what you can do, try different things, see what others are doing, and in this way then go. And then once you get situated and you're confident, then you can function anywhere. Because if you don't have the confidence, you don't function anywhere. It doesn't matter how much you know. It's not what you know, it's how confident you are. That's actually what makes things work. So then the ideal thing is that it's in the place where the teacher is living. That's the idea of the Gurukul. It's the place of the Gurukul, of the teacher. So being in that place, then what they're doing, the lifestyle they're living, they can see everything that you're doing. Otherwise, in your general concept, you come into the classroom and you sit down in the classroom, and other than fiddling with your pen or writing on the desk or sending notes or, you know, doing other stupid stuff, then the problem comes up is that where are they doing the, maybe they can go to another area. So, because it's the little things. See, we'll sit and we'll learn things we have, you know, like this. We'll learn some certain aspects. But how this knowledge, how you're applying it, that can't be seen here. You have a classroom setting, which is the modern setting, that's where everything happens. That's the real place. But the teacher can't see what you do with it. Right? You can't see that. But in the ashram, you can see that. That's the whole idea. Is that you're going to then see how they apply it. Like you say, that you should behave properly, you should respect Vaishnavas and all that. So we see that here. We understand, we see intellectually why it should be there. But then once we walk out of here, that can't be seen. But when the student's in the ashram, you can see how they deal with everybody else, how they deal with the plants, how they deal with the animals, how they deal with the broom, how they deal with the pots and pans. Because that's how you know. You know the difference between when a pot's put down properly and when a pot's put down not properly. You can see the difference when a broom's put down properly or not. You can see how they go through and everything within hand reach, they grab it and pull it off the tree. There's something wrong there. But you won't see that here, right? No trees. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is this is where the culture is taught. Because the theory, yes, that's done in the classroom. But the practical application is not just a workshop that you do for a couple of days. It's actually something that you do day in, day out for years. That's how it is trained. That's how you get the understanding. Because it's in those little things that make the change in the consciousness, change in the lifestyle. Because it won't happen otherwise. It means if you as an individual yourself are determined to do, then you'll go for it. But it'll also still take you so many years or decades. So the children, they'll learn quicker. Because why? What's the advantage for the children in this? Their ego is less. It means they have ego, like that. But they have less. And when you put them in a group environment, they have even less than that. Put them in the home environment, it gets inflated a bit. Right? Because they're in the home, they're the special ones, so therefore they don't do anything. No one's going to be happy, but it works. But if they're in the school with others and they don't do anything, then it's going to stand out. Everybody else is doing. You're not doing. So it's not that you're the special one. You're the one that's not doing what you should do. Does that make sense? So they move in a different mood, a different environment. And so then by that process, then the individual can be developed. And then you can see what they're good at, what they can do, what aspect is there. And so then you have to be able to see what it is they do. Because everyone has a different nature. And the difficulties that we'll have will be different. So therefore the environments that they have to emphasize and be involved in are different. Though there's a generic thing that works. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, why is a cow called a cow? Because there's general qualities that are there. General qualities of how they behave. But there'll be the individuality of each cow. But it's within the concept of what is cowness, right? So human being has a nature. And so that's what's trained, is how to use the human nature and how to use it in God consciousness. Right, the material gurukul will teach them just how to be human, how to elevate themselves within the material concept, you know, either in karma or jnana, but it won't show bhakti. But the Vedic principle is actually that you should be training in bhakti. That's the essential point. So then Srila Prabhupada points out from Nectar Devotion that one of the qualities of Krishna is highly learned. So highly learned means you have knowledge and skills, but you also have character. Nowadays, the emphasis is just on the knowledge and skills. You have knowledge and skills, people think everything else will just happen. You have a degree, your life's perfect. They don't worry that you have to get a job, then you have to see that you make money from that job, and then the point is, okay, you got a job, you have the degree, you got the job. Where's your job? It's 2 hours away. Right? So is the traveling free? No. One is 4 hours of your day. So that means 4 hours either out of your sadhana or out of your family life. Take your pick. Because it's not coming out of your work. No, you're going to get do 8 hours of work plus the 4 hours. So that's 12 hours. That leaves you 12 hours. Right? You want to sleep for 8 hours, then that's going to leave you 4 hours. Right? Your japa is going to take you 2 hours. So then that leaves you 2 hours for eating and taking a bath and hanging out with your family. Right? So that's also perfect because you have the piece of paper, right? You got the degree. So all that worked out perfectly, right? And then in there, where's the training for how you're going to deal with those people and why you should deal with those people? That's not trained. It's just because we're attached, it automatically happens. But since when does that happen? I'm attached. I want to be a good host. And I'm inviting over these people. And because I want it to be, it will be fabulous. The food will be fabulous. The arrangement will be fabulous. I don't know how to cook. I don't know how to set anything up. But because I feel like it, I just know it's going to be wonderful. Is it going to be wonderful? No. You know how to cook? Your food's good. You don't know how to cook? Your food's not good. It's simple. You know how to make arrangements? It looks nice. You don't know? It doesn't look nice. It's simple. See, the problem is it's so simple that it's not appreciated by the modern culture. So it's just that you have some knowledge and skill, you have a degree, that degree can make you money, therefore everything's set and everything's perfect. But who is that perfect for? Not for us, not for God consciousness. So the Vedic system is that if you don't learn the culture, then what's the use of your high-grade knowledge? How can you use it? Because the point is human life, not just making some money. See, if having a job was the goal of life, then yes, we'd be going kind of in the right direction. But you just have to finesse the point of, you know, some places 40% unemployment or stuff, you know, or average 20%. That you kind of have to finesse. But other than that, you're going in the right direction. But when we talk about the character required, because you make money to be able to live your life. So if you don't have character, then do we actually have a life? Right? We have to remember that the phrase, get a life, is kind of a newer thing. It's only been around for, I think, like 20 years or something. Right? Since the political correctness came in and all that, that's when they started saying, get a life. Right? So the whole idea is that without character, and character can only be has to be trained. You have to see its implication in everything, how it's applied. Otherwise, then it won't happen. It's not going to happen just because you want it to. Right? If you want it to and you make the endeavor, that's when it'll happen. But if you only want it to, it's not going to happen. Yeah. So that's why then the whole educational system has to be based on gaining that proper character, gaining the proper knowledge and understanding so that you can apply this in your life. Because whether we're practicing it or not, or have that understanding or not, that all the philosophy of Krishna consciousness does apply down into the very specifics of your life. You just haven't made the connection. Right? Because that's not generally how the modern society works. It's not based on a philosophy. Right? They'll have a few points that they make. You know, it means everybody should be fair, rights, equality, and then we'll apply those in everything. And just few things we use, but they don't necessarily apply so well and across the board. The Vedic, it seems more complex because it's for everything. It has philosophy that applies in everything. So that's the basics that's there. So now that we see that the importance of what's doing this, now you have to have the education to be individualized. Is that each student will be going through the system slightly different than another. And it's not major differences. How you're dealing with them, how you're interacting with them, what kind of schedule they're following, what is their class system, how they fit in, what's being emphasized. So that has to be seen. That's very, very important. And then along with that, it's not just the schedule and those things, because that's the secondary. The actual main thing is the interaction between the teacher and the student. Right? That's actually the main thing that gets there. So the teacher is interacting with the student, guiding them, directing them. So to do that, then there must be that trust. There must have this natural relationship. So that's going to have by being there. And that actually takes a long time to develop. It means, of course, immediately you can get something. But to have it to be full, it takes 2 years. Anything always takes 2 years. It takes you 1 year to adjust just to the environment. It takes another year to adjust to the subtleties of the environment. So just 2 years is required for it to get to that. Then at that point, everybody knows what everybody's thinking, saying, how it works. And so then there's no guesswork. So it can work very, very nicely. Does that make sense? So then, and you're training them, but now when's going to be the most major aspect of the training? Of course, when they graduate and they're bigger, that's when you're going to really see the application, how well they learn, how well they'll apply. But before that is where the difficulty is going to come up, is generally in the teen years. So that means then the teacher has to have this, you know, Prabhupada mentions, the Bhagavatam mentions, or quoting Narad Muni, is that a relationship of firm friendship. You have to have that before they get to the teen years. And that means there has to be some training in what to do, so it's not something new that's being learned. Right? The fundamentals can't be learned new at that age. They already have to be known. Technical stuff, that's what wants to be learned at that age. So knowledge and skills, yes, that's the thing to learn at that age. But the culture has to be learned before. The example is given that if you have a river and it floods every year, let's say in the rainy season, so you have to put up sandbags to keep it from, you know, coming into the village. So when do you put up those sandbags? Right? You put it up when it's starting to overflow? No. But in the modern kind of situation, that's when it is. When the parents can't deal with the kids anymore, they can't control them, now it's time for Gurukul. But, as it is said, then in doing that, you go out there to put the sandbags while it's already flooding, then what's going to happen? The sandbags and the people putting the sandbags are all going to be washed away. So that's why then the Vedic system is, the earlier they come in, the better. So then the standard is they come in like around 5, 6, like this. That's your idea. They come in, then they get all this training, they get these things, these are natural for them. Then when they hit these teen years, then they can do something. Just like, okay, we have temples around the world, right? Like 600 temples. Any of them have a head pujari who's 16 years old? And that doesn't mean 16, now he comes in and learns the puja. It means he already knows it. He can teach you the puja. And we're not just talking going in and doing a simple artik. We're talking about the full Shaligram worship, the full yajnas according to the Vedic version, all these different things that basically no one does. A few individuals may do who are really well trained and really into, but he's able to responsibly run the department at 16. What does that mean? What are other 16-year-olds doing? Look around. Getting a new tattoo, right? Growing their hair, like that, you know, that kind of jazz. So that's the whole point. It's just whatever you want. So that 16-year-old, at 30, will start to settle down and get it together. This one's already got it together at 16. So imagine what they're like at 30. That's the difference in the Vedic culture. Everything's moved down so it can work. We'll think, oh no, but it's not, let them grow the light, this, that, and do all these different things and have fun. Yeah, at whose expense? And then what do they do for the society? So if you go back in time, all the greatness of the world that now the modern world's based on, it was all done by people who were younger. That's what it was. It wasn't old people that were doing it, it was young people. Because they started earlier. Now it's actually everything goes later. But before, everything started earlier. So the character was trained, all these things were trained. Now, of course, to find themselves as an individual, get situated in society, that'll take them some time. But the point is it can be done. So that's the Vedic idea. So if it's done earlier, then the teen years are spent doing something useful rather than just being crazy. So it's just whatever you like. You like useful or you like crazy. You take your pick. Right? Because the thing is you can't have your cake and eat it. You can't enjoy all that nice when they're young up to 10 to the max you can, and then when they turn 11 and go crazy, now it's time for Gurukul. No, you're not going to get much out of it. You'll get something, definitely. but you won't get as much as if the other. So it's just a matter of the child lives for a long time, and you're going to be around for a long time also. Right? So there's a good chance, you know, let's say on an you could be around for 60, 70 years while the kid's around. Okay? So now, up to five, that's everybody, that's they're supposed to be with the kids, spend the maximum amount of time, maximum energy, maximum interaction. That's what you're supposed to do. Gives them the maximum strength. But then from the five until 2025, that's the time for the school. But if we keep that for ourselves, then when they hit 20, 25, then do we see them much the rest of our life? No. And when you get to be old, will you be like living in their house? No, you'll be living in an old age home. That's what the modern culture is offering. Don't make the mistake like the Hindus and think, we'll get the best of both. We'll get all this nice lovey-dovey family relationship, plus we'll get all the modern facility and all the lifestyle and all that, and it'll all work perfect. It's not working out for them. Right? So the whole idea is that one has to see is that, yes, you lose some years here. You get a few years, yeah, that 8 to 10, you could get squeeze something out of that. But you're not going to get any. You're not going to squeeze anything out from the 11 to 17. It means they might squeeze you, but you're not going to squeeze them. You know, that's just the way it is. And then, but if that's done and they're trained, then the point is then after graduation until whenever you move on, then they'll be around. They'll be part of your life. They'll be a support. They'll be there because they're human. You have to remember, humans stick together. Animals don't necessarily. Some are herds. Elephants are herds. Deers are herds. You know, dogs are packs. I don't know if you want any part of that, but, you know. But it's not necessarily all animals work together. Right? So unless they're trained as humans, they won't socially function as humans. You can say, no. Human life is with training. Human form of life, that's you're born with. But if you want human form to turn into human, then it needs training. So that's why Prabhupada put so much emphasis on having this. But, as we see, you can see, for the teacher's side, it's a lot of effort. That means basically 16, 18 hours a day, you have to be involved in the children's life. And how many people want to do that? Right? So that's why it's generally given that it's a brahminical activity. Because they're the only ones that can do something like that, work for someone else's kid. Right? We work for our own kid because we're of our attachment. But how many of us will work for someone else's kid? Now and again, yeah, they're over, we're nice to them. But on a daily basis, day in, day out, and they're crazy. Right? It's rare you find someone that they love kids and the kids are always over at their house and always doing that. I'm not even sure if we had one in our 5,000 community strong here. I haven't heard of one. You know what I'm saying? It's there. You know, everybody knows that it's there and the people talk about it. But generally they're more in the, you know, suburbs and rural kind of things. Cities, I haven't heard so much about it. You understand? So, that means it's something that's very, very unique. That one has to have the training, one has to have the ability to do that. So it shouldn't be taken lightly. So then that brings about the aspect of the relationship between the parents and the teacher. Manu says that mother, father, and teacher, these are three persons you respect for your whole life. Right? So if you don't respect your elders, technically you're not human. It's sinful. Right? Lack of respect is not a human trait. So you have to have respect for these three. And so it has to be understood. The foundation is going to be established by the parents. The training is going to be done by the teachers. And then that application in their practical life, that will be done by the parents again. So the majority of the time is spent with the parents. But a very essential time is spent with the teachers. And if the teachers aren't respected for that, appreciated for that, then you're not setting yourself up for having a very strong cultural training for your child. Because if you don't like authority, then remember again the apple and the tree analogy. If you don't like authority, your child won't like authority. But there's one difficulty in that. You're an authority. They don't like authority. They don't like you. Right? We've never read in any story in the Vedic culture where the girl tells the mother that I hate you, you're ruining my life. Right? You understand? So there is a difference. So we have to understand that and appreciate that. If that's appreciated, then we can do our best to try to make it work and try to do like that, because it's a cooperation. That's the point. It's a cooperation between parents and teachers. That's the Vedic culture. It's not that it's just something that's there like a state school that you just send your kids off and then they come back in the afternoon like that, and supposedly they learn something, though nowadays it's not guaranteed. Smart ones will learn who want to learn. Others, they don't necessarily learn, but you know what to do. But it's a matter of, it's a relationship, that there's training of the children. So the strength is areas where the parents can't deal, the teachers can, because it's a parental rasa. This is not necessarily understood either. Is that the relationship of the teacher with the students is parental rasa. The advantage over the home, if for training, is it doesn't have the attachment. There's no sense of possession. So because there's no sense of possession, therefore you can look at it objectively. Because otherwise, the parent, no, my kid's going to be this. But the kid doesn't necessarily want to do that, or have the nature to do that. But no, he has to be. He's my kid. My kid does that. But for the teacher, no, it's whatever his nature is, that you're going to see he's involved in. And then they're going to develop. And then from there, they can do something useful. So... Okay, so then to be in the school, because this is a very specific kind of education, though it's a Vedic education, it basically applies to everybody, but they have to have the suitable behavior and intellect for the training. So that means they either already have it when they come from the parents, or they have the propensity to be able to develop it in a quick enough way. And so then if they have that, they'll fit in very nicely. If not, then yes, there are other alternative educational programs that you can use. The homeschooling, private schooling, the state-style schooling. I mean, all these different things are there. One can use them. So the Vedic education means then it has to be that one can adjust to that one's not the center of attention. Right? Because the Vedic culture, the idea is that Krishna is the center of attention. Because if it's always about us, then we won't be able to actually be a very good social individual. Because how many people want it to be about you? Right? Unless you're someone fabulous. And of course, to your mother, you're always fabulous. But to everyone else, they may or may not like. And if you ask your mom, she also knows that you're not so fabulous. But still, she's attached, so, you're fabulous. So she's always open. So then there's a testing period in which you see if the student and the teacher match, that they come to the school, they see. So sometimes it's just that they have the potential, it's just early. Or, so then they can try again later. It doesn't work now, they get a little more mature, then they try again. So that's why here then we have the system of, one can try 3 different times. Doesn't work out the first time, then after some time, try again second, try again a third time. After the third time it doesn't work, then there's a good chance that nature's not there. And so then in that, then the child is seen, they're observed, how it works. So basically you're looking for what's the inherent nature to work with, how they respond. Like that. You're not looking for that they have training. You're looking for that they have the potential to be trained. Right? There's an underlying, because the parents have training, right? Otherwise, why would they be sending their kids to Gurukul? Right? So that underlying training, that would be there in the kid, if the parents have manifest that in their dealings, how they're dealing, what they talk about. Right? So if that's there, then we see that, then the child will have something. Then he can go from there. Does that make sense? So you just have to just see how that'll work. Then, okay, next here, the duties of the brahmachari, the importance of sadhana service attitude and menial service. So sadhana, we've heard a lot about. We know how the regulation and all that, and then it produces the environment for that spiritual development, because it's about regularity, because Krishna is always who he is. Like Krishna is always the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna always has that affection for the living entities. That's constant. But we've come to the material world, we've left Krishna, so we don't have that. So how to interact with Krishna, since the goal is to become Krishna conscious. So by doing regular activities that put us in contact with Krishna, to be able to be interactive with Krishna, you know, through his name, through the deity, through the Shastra, through the devotees, right, living in the Dham, worshipping Tulsi, these direct activities, then by regularly doing them, then we become purified. And by regularly doing, we get a taste. So that's very important. Sense, being God conscious, is the whole idea. And as an adult, then your own sadhana, your own lifestyle, that you should be able to practice on your own. Right? You're taking advantage of the association of others and becoming inspired, but it should be you yourself can follow the sadhana. Right? That's the idea. So to get that, then the students have to be trained. So that it becomes part of their lifestyle, not just something they know about. So that means then every day it's there, the chanting, the regularity of it. And the more it's regular, the better it works. Especially for boys. Then every day without gap, if it's regular, then after some time, generally years, they'll start to notice that, hey, there's a pattern here. You know? But it takes them a long time. The girls figure it out immediately. As soon as they see there's a pattern here, that means it's boring. We need to adjust this. So for the girls, that's a different thing. So then how it works in the house, because that's not necessarily every day the same. Right? If the mother's exactly, it's like, how you say, sadhana's like a lines written in stone, yes, like Raghunath Das Goswami, then okay, then the daughter will be comfortable in that environment. But if it's not that, you know, it's this, it's that, one day early, one day late, one day this, that, stay longer, go back earlier, then that kind of variety will be nice for the girl. But boys will never thrive in that environment, because they won't notice anything. One has to remember, girls are always conscious of everything at all times. Boys aren't. They just aren't. You know, they may figure out that, hey, I can take this and throw this. You know, they might be conscious enough to figure that out. But that's kind of the limit, right? They put things in their mouth, they can chew them and swallow them. They kind of figure out which things they can chew on and which they can't. Like that. But, you know, that's been many years of experimenting. You know? So, if every day it's the same without break, then they start to get into the pattern, they start to pick up the habits. So one has to understand there's a difference between the boys and the girls. Girls, they want to do it, it's done. Boys, unless there's practice and it's gone for a long time, then only it's done. There's a difference. So the mother shouldn't think, no, you don't have to do all that. Yeah, that's right if you're a girl, but if it's a boy, then it doesn't work like that. Boys are different. Right? They're slower, but once it's there, it's solid. Right? The expectation of men is they're going to be stable and steady. And the understanding of women, they're not necessarily going to be. So the point is that combination between the steadiness and the unsteadiness, then it makes things, you know, both, how you say, workable and interesting. But if both are unsteady, then, you know, how well can you fly a flag without a flagpole? Doesn't work. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is without the stableness, what's the use of the variety? So that combination is important. So the boys have to be in a stable environment all the time. Not, okay, it was like that for 2 weeks, now we can do something else. No, that's how girls work. Boys, they do it for years. Then it starts to sink in. And so then it's always like that. Then they start to see the patterns. They start to see the values. They things like that. So That's the aspect of why you have to do the different things always. It can't change. That's why you'll see that for the boys, then vacations are very short. They go home for a few days, and they'll survive. They'll come back, get right into their schedule. But if they go for home for any longer, they'll come back, they won't get into the schedule. In fact, they won't want to be there, because at home, they're God. Well, if they come into school, they're one of the students. They're one of the boys. There's 50 boys. You're one of 50. But if you go home, hey, you're God. Everybody loves you. Everything's about you. You don't have to do anything. Well, at the school, you want something done, you do it yourself. You want your clothes washed, you wash it. You want them nicely kept, you keep it nice. You want to eat, you cook. But at home, you don't have to do any of that. So the short time, then they'll survive. Once they get older, then yes. But otherwise, no. That's why it's done like that. And this is just an adjustment, you know, for our community. Because traditionally, they go to the school. They don't leave the school until they graduate. That's the thing. Parents could come and visit them at the school, right? But they can't leave the school. They don't. They're in the ashram. So for us, they go home. Then is it short? Yes. So you have a few. You know, we used to have one longer one that didn't work so good. So then we made a bunch of shorter ones. That's worked good. But before we were doing the girls' system, then the girls had, I think it was 3 months break, like that. You know, because without that, they wouldn't be able to handle the 9 months. Right? Because it has to be variety. So doing nothing and varieties of things for three months, then they're happy to do the 9 month schedule. You understand? It's different. You know what I'm saying? Boys in the summer vacation, you know, at least in the modern thing of 3 months, they're bored after a few weeks. There's nothing to do. But because it's there, then yeah, and then they get used to that laziness, then they don't want to go back to school. But you forget, girls want to go back to school, because now they're bored of the summer. The boys get adjusted to doing nothing. You understand? They're different. Yeah. And so then, like this, then you have that regularity. You have the aspects, and then you can then see which things are there. Then the service attitude, every day you clean, then you start to develop the ability to clean. Otherwise, yeah, you do it once now and again. Yeah, you can do that. But they won't be able to fall back on it. A girl's done something, she wants to do it, she'll just do it. Boys know unless they do it as a practice, it doesn't become part of their nature. Yeah. So you have the service itself, and you have the attitude in which it's done. Yes.
How many years the boys need to become steady?
How many years they need to become steady? The tradition is ideally 12.
It means 12 years they should be in system, at least.
In the Gurukul system, yeah. It means that's solid. That would be the generic, means that would be your general. But you see, sometimes the Kshatriya Vaishyas, they'd come later and leave earlier, so then they'd get less. But the minimum recommended is 4. But that's just going to get some basic things. But you won't see the results immediately. You'll see it like that later. When they start to get serious, they get interested in, you know, a girl, they get married, they get this, then you'll start to see the effect of their training in Gurukul. But if they do longer, then you'll see the effect all the way through. So it's just a matter of what you want. You know, it's just like, let's say you want to buy a house. Okay? Now, what's going to be the difference between the house you can buy in 4 years and the house you can buy in 12 years? So that's just the way it works. You know? Or it's, hey, you can cook dinner in 2 minutes. Right? But what's the difference between that and taking, you know, 45 minutes to cook? There's a difference. So that's always the way it is. You get what's invested like that. Because we have to remember is that if the boy's grown up and mature and responsible, that gives him much more satisfaction to the mother than he's crazy and just wants to do his own thing and thinks his mother's stupid. So So the choice is yours. The modern mother picks the second one. You know, she somehow or other appreciates being called stupid. And the kid's never around and doesn't do anything she likes. You know, and finally when they're 30 and they got a few kids and all that, then they tell mom, you know, it was nice, you know, you always cared and all that. I see where you're coming from. So the point is you're going to lose the time anyway. So might as well lose it in a positive way. Two, training so that then when it comes out, it's solid. Rather than you lose it because they're stupid and doing their own thing. Like that. Does that make sense? Like that. You only have a certain amount of time you'll be with them. So then use it nicely. Is that so? Okay. So service attitude, menial service. Service is something they do, it's mechanical, they do. And then with that you develop the service attitude. Just like sadhana is something you do, and then the idea is you'll develop the devotional attitude. Right? So there's the knowledge that's there, knowledge and skills, but there's the attitude that goes with it. That makes the difference between what something is for. Right? You have knowledge and skills, and you perform that activity. But, okay, let's say someone is cooking. So, and they have the knowledge of cooking, they have the skill to cook, so you know it's going to be a good preparation. So now the point is this karma, is this jnana, or is this bhakti? How do you tell? Sorry? The attitude. So that's the whole point, is that. Yes, you have what's there. You have the various things. But you have to know what is the attitude. So the attitude, if that's not developed, then that's how you say it's devotional. Right? It's devotional because of the attitude. Does that make sense? So that's why then it must be practiced for a long time. And then you develop the skill and all that, but that's not highly educated. Highly educated is then when the attitude comes along with it. That combination is, yes.
What's the parent's responsibility for this point about suitable behavior in intellect? Because oftentimes, I mean, I see also many times when kids come to the group and then they've not been allowed in. The first reaction always is the parents, it's the Gurukul's fault, or it's the system's fault.
It means that's always going to be the conditioned living entity by nature has to blame someone else because we put ourselves as the center of attention. So according to us, we're God. So then why would we be at fault? It has to be someone else's fault. So it's not, the modern culture is not based on self, I say, where you analyze your own nature, what it is, how you're doing. It's not based on that. Self-improvement means how you can make more money. Right? And it's only that behaving nicely, this and that, just gives you a better situation, therefore you do it. It's not that you should do this. This is proper. This is the standard. So it's not that those people were interested in the self-help books. No, it's everybody should be doing it. You know what I'm saying? But the point is why is there self-help books and who's reading them? 13-year-olds? No. It's people up in their 30s and 40s. Really? Because they haven't been trained in that. So the Vedic system is you should be trained in this. Then it will be there. So the point is yes, they'll say it's that. But the point is that why doesn't the child have that religious mood? Why doesn't he have a respect for others, a respect for seniors? Why doesn't he ever have respect for his surroundings? You know what I'm saying? Again, the apple in the tree. No. Does that make sense? So, that's the whole idea. Is that you're trying to train them in a human environment. Not in a regional environment. So we're not training them in Indian or American or Russian or China. We're training them in human. Like that. So what the Vedas say, that's what we're trained in. Human can function anywhere. But regional works in its own area. You know what I'm saying? Americans are great in America. Outside of America, most people don't like them. You know? Many countries. In another country, no one likes them. In their own country, it's fine. So it's not actually that developed of a training. But the Vedic system is you're trained as humans, so therefore as human, you can function anywhere. Right? You know, so just like, let's say, as far as even just following a little bit the Vedic culture, then we see the Hindus, then there's some benefit, the family values and that, and they do well. They generally can go to any country in the world and do all right. They go there and they fit in, and they do better at it than the locals. You know? So they're fine. Does that make sense? But you see other countries, it's they can't necessarily go just anywhere and fit in anywhere. They have to go to wherever they go and make it like their place. But you see those from the Vedic culture can go there and fit into whatever's going on. You understand? So therefore it's the more universal training. So there, then another aspect as brahmachari, then part of the training, then we see is that they have the nature, they have the ability, then they grow up, they go through the samskars, they get the upanayanam samskar, so this is one part of the preparation for spiritual training. But it's a situation that's specific for Gurukul, it's not something that you can use anywhere else. So in the Gurukul, then they have the schedule, they have the things that then they can use it. They do the worship, they do the yajnas, these things. So this is all part of what's called Purushcharya Vidhi. So Purushcharya Vidhi then is these technical things, serving prasad, doing menial service, chanting Hare Krishna, these cleanliness, these other aspects, these are all there that can be trained. And so it just makes it easier for them when they grow up to get involved in the spiritual training. And then from that, then they're very well situated. So it's not that it starts at that time. Right? For the first generation, it's because of chanting, because the other things don't make sense. By the chanting, then we get purified by that, then we get involved in doing services in the temple and community. From that, we become qualified to get initiation, and then like that. But then so much time is spent. Well, for the children, they can do all this when they're younger, and then when they become an adult, then them getting initiated works very well. Does that make sense? So it's a natural part of what's going on in the training there. And this way, then, they know the worship, they know the regularity, they know how to try to make things connected to Krishna. And so then it's up to the individual how much they value this, and they apply that in their life. Okay, then the next section, the concept of Vedic academic training, and its basis on the 14 books of Vedic knowledge. Okay, so the Vedic concept of knowledge is not just this academic, it must be realized. Right? Realization comes from practice. You have the knowledge, you know what it's for, you practice it, apply it in a practical way, from that you get realization. Realization means now you can use it in your life. Otherwise, you have it, you have the knowledge, but you can't use it. Does that make sense? So that's the difference. You have to know what it's talking about. Then the knowledge, you can get so much more from it. Because otherwise, I can remember so many times sitting there and you see someone cooking something and you look at it and go, yeah, that makes sense. I could do that. And then later you go and you try to cook it. You can't cook it at all. You know, how long do you let this cook? What color should it get? What should go with here? Did this go before? You know, you get it. Does that make sense? So, that's the thing. You regularly do these things. Then it starts to... that. Then you know what it is. Then you just say, yeah, okay. Then, you make a chance with this. Then you fry the vegetables a bit. Then you're going to, you know, how you say... continue that process with some steaming and that, then you're going to put this in, you know, this spice in, and then you're going to wait at the end, you're going to put in this, and then you're done. And you can cook it. Because you know the training, you've been trained in it, you have the realization of cooking. So then you can do it. But unless you have realization of all the aspects of cooking, you can't just cook anything. So that's the idea in the Vedic system, is you learn knowledge so it's realized, so that you can actually use it and do it. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, now, then the Vedic idea is that if that's going to be effective, you're going to get the maximum in your life, when where is knowledge going to come from? It has to come from authority. Because if it doesn't come from authority, then you have to figure it out yourself. Just like modern medicine. Okay, modern medicine, I'm not sure how long, when they would claim that they started it, but if they do go back to the Greeks, till now that's like, what, 3,000 years. Right? Okay? They only figured out 100 years ago that there were germs and people died because of the germs and they weren't clean because they didn't wash their hands and they didn't wash the wound. That's why people died. 100 years ago. That means it took them 2,900 years to figure that out. Why? Because there's no authority. But in the Vedic system, you learn right from the beginning about being clean. How everything you do, you wash your hands, your mouth, your feet. You don't touch things without doing these things. You understand? So right from the beginning, you learn these things. Because you've heard from authority. Because the Shastras say, that's why we do. So then in this, then the Shastras divide the knowledge into two categories, the Para and Apara. Para means transcendental knowledge, means it's directly transcendental. Apara means those knowledge and skills that can be used in line with the transcendental. Right? So it's not para, it's not transcendental, it's apara, but it's in line with para. And then if it's not in line with para, then the same knowledge is called avidya, or ignorance. Right? Does that make sense? Let's say cooking. That's apara vidya. You use that to cook for Krishna, then it's dovetailed in Krishna's service. It becomes transcendental. Even though itself it's not a transcendental activity, but it becomes spiritualized. Does that make sense? It's a secondary activity. The primary is the devotion in which you cook it that makes it, you know, something to offer. And Krishna accepts it, then you have prasad. Right? So that's called apara vidya. But now, you have some, you know, chef with some stars, and he's cooking, and it's never for Krishna, even though he's very good. That's avidya. It's ignorance. Why? It may be knowledge, but its effect is ignorance. Its effect, it will take you down. It will degrade you. So that's the whole point, is transcendental knowledge. You hear Srimad Bhagavatam, you hear Bhagavad Gita, you're always going to get benefit. Whether you're a materialist or not, you'll get benefit. But the apara vidya, if you approach that and you don't know how to use it in connection with Krishna, it will distract you. Right? You know, just like people get distracted by New Age, by all these different self-help, political things, economic things, they get into that and they get distracted from devotional service. The same way as you can get, that's by knowledge and passion and ignorance. But you can get this distracted in the same way by, you know, astrology and astronomy and vastu and rituals and all these things. They can also distract you. So that's the whole point, is that you don't. It's just a more mode of goodness way of getting distracted. But the point is, mode of goodness is still a distraction. Pure goodness, that's not a distraction. So the idea is, you learn knowledge that's from the platform of goodness to be used in pure goodness. Knowledge and passion and ignorance, unless you really require it, would not be your first choice. So then, Srimad Bhagavatam means the paravidya, transcendental knowledge. In the Veda, that's the Upanishads, that's given then as the essence, as the Vedanta Sutra, the essence of that, then the commentary on that, that is the Srimad Bhagavatam. So for us as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, our book is Srimad Bhagavatam. We see everything in connection with Bhagavatam. So for us is that other branches of knowledge are only useful in as much as you can appreciate them in line with Srimad Bhagavatam. You don't see them in line with Bhagavatam, they're not actually considered important. Means they may be great knowledge and all that, but if you don't see it in connection with Bhagavatam, then the problem is if you get distracted from devotional service, what's the point? Right? It's like the African saying, I think it's Zulu saying, I think, that, you know, the person made the effort, he climbed the mountain, he got to the top, to the peak, just to fall down the other side. Right? So then what's the point? We become great, we become knowledge, so many skills, but if it takes us away from Krishna consciousness, that's the opposite effect of what the Vedic culture is for. So then, in that, then they divide it. You have 14 books of Vedic knowledge. One of them, the first one, is the Paravidya, or the transcendental knowledge. Then the Aparavidya, there's 13 branches. Right? So these 13 branches are, you have the four Vedas, then you have four aspects of what do you call it? Sanskrit. You have the grammar, Vyakaran. You have the form of it, you know, the poetry of it, the meter, the prosody. Then you have the pronunciation, and you have the dictionary. So in this way, that's eight. Then that way you can approach the Veda, because the Veda has knowledge. You can approach it through the language. Then you're going to apply that in ritual, but the ritual, you have to also know the proper times. So then you get ritual kalpa, and you'll get jyotish, which means how to establish the proper time for doing things. Like, we want to follow a codicil, you have to know the jyotish to be able to establish that. When's Janmashtami? When's, you know, like this. So then that makes, how many is that? Four, that's 10. And then you have four more, which then are called the upangas, which is the transcendental knowledge itself. Then you have the Puranic histories and everything. In other words, you have the knowledge, but you want to see example of how people have applied that. So the Puranas, Upapuranas, the Itihasas, they all show how people have done that, and the knowledge and skills, how people live that culture. So then the Ayurveda, the Dhanurveda, Stapanaveda, and Gandharva Veda, and the 64 arts. So that then establishes that. Then you have to have, okay, then what's the structure of the human life? That's given in the Dharma Shastras. And then you're going to discuss all these things. That's going to be logic. So in this way, you have 14 branches. So these 14, then in the practical application, then we're going to see is the Vedas are there. So from the Vedas, verses will be learned. So those four Vedas become one topic. Then you have the Sanskrit itself, or language. And so that becomes one topic. So the Sanskrit, the English, the Bengali, these, and then how they work. So they have, language has a natural grammar, a system. That grammar can apply to any language. It means every language has its own grammar. But all the elements of grammar are based on the eternal grammar that is there in Sanskrit. Right? Because language comes from the Lord. Right? That's the first point that Jiva Goswami makes, is that the letters come from Krishna. And those letters have meanings. So the whole process comes from Krishna. So then, having come from Krishna, there's a way that it works. Now, depending on the language, it may be more developed, less developed, more developed in one area, less in another. But it won't have the completeness that Sanskrit has on all levels. But in any case, it's because it has parts of that. That's why it's a language and it works. So then, if you understand the essence, what is grammar, what is communication, then from that you can understand Sanskrit, English, and Bengali. Or any language, whatever it is. But you have to understand what's grammar. Does that make sense? That's the whole point. It's not that it's, oh, that's Sanskrit. No, it's grammar. That's the whole point of the Aparavidyas, is that coming from the Lord, being scripture, then these are what is medicine. This is what is architecture. This is what is ritual. Everything else will be based on that, or parts of that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then language is your second group. Then you're going to have your astronomy, so that includes all your varieties of mathematics and these other aspects that are there. Astronomy, astrology, and so that's another group where you're working with numbers and how numbers work, because numbers have a nature and they work in a particular way. You understand that, you can do so much. Modern doesn't actually understand much how numbers work, not at least what we're taught. Like that. If you major in mathematics in university and then you do postgraduate, then they'll start to show you how numbers work. Before that, they won't even bother. They'll just give you the simplest system, that you can just write it down as you go. You do multiplication, you just write down all the things and get your answer. But if you understand how numbers work, they work in a different way, and you can do all those calculations within your head. You can write them down, but you don't need to. Does that make sense? Because you understand how numbers work. So the idea is that you're just saying, how does language work? How do numbers work? What do rituals do? How do mantras function? You understand? This is realized knowledge, not just knowledge. So the idea is to come to that platform, that understanding. It's deeper. That's why it's different. It doesn't seem, you know, because it's not about, oh, you finished this and you could do this. The point is that, yes, you did the test, you passed the test, you got good markings. But if I ask you 2 weeks later and I had you do the test, there's a good chance you might fail the test. And definitely if I did it a bit later. I remember when I was a kid, they were saying, whatever you learned during the nine months that you studied in school, right? At least, I mean, in America, you did 9 months school and 3 months break. I think other places are a bit more smart. They do 10 months school and 2 months break. But whatever. Yeah. So, 70% of what you learned during that 9 month year, you'll forget. But don't worry. You'll have remembered 30%. But don't be in anxiety. That 3 month vacation, you'll forget the rest of it. So then when you start the next fall, you basically have to learn from scratch. If you look at the contemporary just curriculum, the outline of curriculum, what are the subjects that you learn during the 12 years that we call our, you know, primary and secondary education? It's the same thing repeated over and over and over and over again because they always forget. Because it's never used, it's never practiced. So the Vedic system doesn't have to do that. So in a shorter time, you can get more done. Because you're using it. You have to use it. That's the whole purpose. So in using it, that's then where you get more, you get farther gone. Now, if you ask them, what do they know? Then they don't necessarily know. Because they it's a lifestyle for them. You know, you ask other kids, what do you know? They can tell you because that's just what they showed them in class that day. So then it's just knowledge. But realization, if someone says, what do you know? You don't, you say, well, I know nothing. It means this at least is the experience you'll get if you deal with anybody who actually does know something. Right? And it's not just academic. Like you can actually, academic, what they know, they can go on for years, but... You know, we're talking about people who can actually do something with their knowledge. They'll consider they don't know, at least if they're cultured. If they're not cultured, of course, they want to say how great they are. Like that. So, that makes sense. So the idea is that it's the understated. Right? In other words, it's not the American in your face, it's more the British understated, more the European, you know, you just that people, as they associate, they start to notice what you know. You don't just tell them, yeah, I know this and that, and I did food here, and I did that there, and you know. And, yeah, you don't do that. So, okay. So then, all these things, as we can see, is all these branches. Okay, yeah, okay. Then we got, then the next group will be philosophy, which will include the logic, because the philosophy is learning to connect with logic, how to apply it. You see Prabhupada, the acharyas, they always explain it with logic, so it's called anvikshiki when you combine the two. Then you have the element of the Vedic social cultural aspect, so it'll be the Purana and the Dharma Shastra. Because the point is that the Dharma Shastra, you see the example in the Purana, what they're doing in the Purana, that's what's written in the Dharma Shastra. So like this, then they're combined together, then you get six subjects. You know, the areas that this is then how the focus is. It's the 14 books, but it's dealt with in this grouping so that they all are seen together. Does that make sense? Like that. But in all this, it's all about seeing whatever you're doing in connection with Krishna consciousness. That's what one is trying to do. So unless it's seen in connection with Krishna consciousness, then actually you don't know the subject matter. You may know enough to use it materially, but to use it spiritually, you have to see it in connection with spiritual knowledge. So unless it can be seen in line with Srimad Bhagavatam, that mood that's given, because we see in the Bhagavatam so many great personalities, kings and emperors and sages. They're so qualified, but they're all Krishna conscious. That's why they're mentioned in the Bhagavatam. They're able to see what they're doing connected to Bhagavatam. And so therefore, what we discuss in Bhagavatam are those aspects. Like Yudhishthira, how he has the Rajasuya sacrifice because it means he'll be able to invite Krishna and worship Krishna. But the detail of it won't be given there because that's all explained in Kalpa. So you want to know more of that? That's given in Kalpa. But the point is how Yudhishthira mars his mood. That's the mood you have to have when you study Kalpa. You understand? That's then how it works. And so yes. That is then, we can say, is that our line. So that's what Srila Prabhupada gave, Bhakti Vedanta. It means you understand the goal, it means you have knowledge. The end of knowledge is Vedanta. And the purpose of that is Bhakti. So then you have Bhakti Vedanta. That's the whole idea of how ISKCON is designed. It's designed to have that devotion. Because if you don't have that devotion, then it won't work very good. Yes? Oh, okay. Then we see that, then the part two here, then the Gurukul training of Krishna and Balaram. So we see that they perfectly followed all this. In other words, what we're doing, we're following them. But there's the Vedic standard that's there. Krishna and Balaram perfectly did that. We're following that. So that's how it works. So we see that after Krishna went to Mathura, then after that initial time with his parents and all that, then the first thing was to send him to Gurukul. And so therefore then they had, he was trained in the culture and everything like that. When it seemed that culture was strong, then he was trained in the 14 books of Vedic knowledge, because that in the Vedic sense is considered general education. Right? Nowadays it's math, English, and general knowledge. Right? So that will be your core curriculum of any school in the world. It means whatever is the local language or the important language, mathematics, and then what they consider important general knowledge. The natural sciences and the other different things and things like this. They'll get into that. If you have that, then that's the basic. You'll get by. So the Vedic is all these 14 books. That's general knowledge. But the core of it then is the philosophy. Then having learned that, then you specialize. Right? So Krishna and Balaram being Kshatriyas, then they specialized in the knowledge of the Kshatriyas, so then, diplomacy, then how to reconcile with people, how to give them benefits. If that doesn't work, how to give them benefits. If that doesn't work, then how to separate them or give ultimatums. If that doesn't work, then how to fight. And then in fighting, then, how to march, how to retreat, how to march with the other armed armies, how to work with allies, all these different things. The circle of kings, like this. Your kingdom is here. Your next kingdom is technically your enemy because he's the one who can attack you. But the one on the other side of him is your friend because he can't attack you. So that means you're friends with him. The guy in the middle, who's both of your enemy, is kept in check. But you're the enemy for him, for that guy. And the one on the other side of you is his friend, which is your enemy. So in other words, all your enemies are all friends, and all your friends are all enemies of these guys. And this way, they just keep themselves in check. So how to balance that, how to make, these are the things he studied. So as Kshatriyas, so that was their specific training. Then having done that, then they learned the arts. Because the Vedic concept is you always learn science first. If you learn art first, then the mind will take the prominence. And if the mind takes the prominence, then the emotions, the feelings, what you want, and it's not what you should do or what's reality. So always science is first. So when you know the science that it's based on, then you have to apply the science. That's the art. So you always come to the art. But if you start with the art, you may never do the science. Does that make sense? So you start with the art, Then when you get to the point you know it well enough to apply it, then you start applying it. That's when the art is. Then you'll use the art. The mind will work in the field of the intelligence rather than the intelligence will be used by the mind for sentiment. Yes.
So in our case, the science of this body is
Krishna. Yes, on the philosophy and that. But it means, let's say you're talking language, then what is the science, or what is a noun, what is a verb, what they do, what they function, how sound works. These kind of things like that. Then you get into the application of that. You know, then you can get poetry and get, you know, dramas and get all these other things. But otherwise, if you don't know that, then you don't necessarily be able to function very well. Because then you'll use your art, but how you like. Like, I remember one artist in the painting, he has Lord Chaitanya dancing in kirtan, and he has them surround, you know, mridanga players on each side. But now, traditionally, you have the drum, you wear it in a certain way. Right? You have the big end closer to the body, the small end farther out. Because you play them differently. You know how you use the hands. And so in the painting, he has half the guys doing that. The other half, he has them with the drum backwards the other way. And I ask him, why do you do that? Because you don't play a drum like that. And he said, no, but it looks better in the painting. That's someone who learned the art first and not the science. So that's what you're going to get. So they'll just adjust it because it feels better. It sounds better. So you have to know the science. Then within the science, then you make it very nice in that. But if nothing else, at least it's exact and correct. And then if you can make it nicer, then that's even better. So the more the training, then the more all this is integrated and it comes out very, very nice. So that, I think, went through. And then the 64 arts. So that was the last thing they learned. So then the arts being learned there, then it's all the variety of things that are used in human society and interaction. So you have music, you have drama, you have dance, you have the cooking. So you have the fine arts. The other arts like this, you have recreational arts, language, you know, how to communicate like this, and then you have your aspects of meteorology and geology and other things like this that are useful, so you know what kind of dirt is there, what the clouds are, what's going to happen, what's going to be the seasons, all these different things like this. So whatever is used within the human society, then they're classified together. There's so many arts, so they just classify into 64. Just like Krishna has unlimited qualities, there's 64 qualities. So arts, there's so many, but it's always classified as 64. That just makes it, you can focus on 64. More than that, you can say 80 arts, you won't do it. You take the 8, because arts are arts, you can combine them together, so something as always can be a subset of another one. And that way, then, whatever the arts are, they go within that, and then you have what you have. So like that, then Krishna Balaram knew that, having known all that, then they graduated, and then they went back home, and then we see the rest of the Dwarka Leela went very nicely. And we see that then in that pastime with Sudama Brahman, then Krishna refers to that. That whatever we learned of value in our life, we learned that at the Gurukul. And so that's the way the old schoolmates, then they were discussing like this. So his point is, he's such a good Brahmin, he's able to perform his Kshatriya duties, that's all by the benefit of what they've learned in the school. Right? And we see is that, except for that time in Gurukul, then Vasudeva and Devaki, then they could be there for all his activities, and he made nice arrangements. So looks like we have some time left. How to do something with that? Do you want to? Are there some questions on any of this? Or yes.
Maharaj, a lot of this focusing on the character development. Could you explain the importance of why it's specifically important to start character development at a young age as opposed to any age?
That means character development means through intelligence you can develop character at any age, but the point is you have to want to do it and you have to put in the intelligence to do that. Problem is you need character to be able to do that, because you need determination, perseverance, steadiness. So if those haven't been cultivated, it makes it very difficult. Because the children, then they have all these things and they can be trained. I mean, ignorance is, you know, a core basic, but they can be trained in these various areas. Because it's said that your knowledge you learn, you're getting that from different people at different stages. So that association, then in that, by associating with the parents, with the teachers, with the members of the community, then they're able to develop these practices and that. And otherwise, then they won't. But the parents have to be aware of that, the teachers have to be aware of that, and make the students aware of it. Otherwise, then, you know, they just go nuts.
Yeah. Rashi, can you please explain something about what should be done before the child comes in the Gurukul by the parents?
What will be done? Is that what will be done by the parents? Is that one of the things of the discussions?
Yeah.
But just in essence, because they'll be in detail, that's on another day. But in essence is that, in other words, the parents have to be very clear what their values are. And then see that that's given to the children, how much they can. And so that is there, but in a way that matches what they're doing. You know what I'm saying? The mentality of the child. That makes sense. So it's not that the parent, because the educational system's not automatic, it's a science. So in the same way as raising children is also a science. It doesn't just happen. You know what I'm saying? The girl didn't become pregnant because she touched a doorknob or something. So there's a science. So in the same way, there's a science how to deal with children.
You mentioned about the attitude, that because they come early,
yes,
and they stay longer, yes, so the attitude remains with them of caring and that all that positive,
yes,
attitude,
yes,
whatever,
yes,
remains for the whole life.
Yes.
So is it, I'm just, it's a curiosity, it is guaranteed it remains the whole life? Or
is it guaranteed? Is anything guaranteed?
No.
You do business, is it guaranteed you'll make any money?
So maybe situations can change that person.
No, but the point is anything guaranteed? You're dealing with your world. So I think the only thing you can guarantee, that from what I've heard from authorities, that you can count on is death and taxes. Those are the only things that are guaranteed. So you don't have to be in anxiety about those things. Those will be there. So.
Thank you very much.
It should be on what we've discussed, because other things like what Prabhu mentioned, that's another topic in itself.
Okay, that topic will be discussed in detail. My question was, so when the children are coming to Gurukul, they are coming from different backgrounds.
Yes, yes.
So the Gurukul education as well as the Garbhadhan Sanskar education also important, I think, if you want to have the good children.
Yes, that's why Prabhu talks about the importance of Garbhadhan. So the Samskars are there. It prepares them that you may not see it then, you'll see it later. But you will also see effects then. We remember talking to one South Indian Brahmin. He said he had two sons. One was born according to Garbhadhan, one wasn't. He says you can tell the difference. You know, he was just being honest, because we were discussing with him the importance of samskars. So he was saying, no, this is just the way it is. So Prabhupada, that's why Prabhupada gives it. We may, you know, it's an option maybe if you like, but it's not so important. But it makes a difference. Like that. So that's why samskars are there. And based on your previous samskars or lack of them, then you'll have an attitude when you come to the school. So if that's workable, then you can take advantage of the training. If not, then you'll have to wait until you do have some. Like it may be more clear what it is you require, what nature you require. Then you'll work on that. Then you'll try coming back to the school. And the parents will see, they'll work on it. Then the child can come back. It's just a matter of, if you're already aware, it makes it easier. Like I've had parents come to me and say, what are you looking for in the child? We want to send our children to Gurukul. Oh, how old is your child? Oh, we haven't had the child yet. We wanted to know first. Right? Like that.
For example, if some child is coming, whether the Krishna Conscious Philosophy Training has the power to change also after the birth?
Why not?
This process had a power.
Why not? That's the benefit of the first generation. Because you have to remember, it's not one of the Dasa Samskars to go to IIT Mumbai. So, basically, who in this room has any samskars? And they're here. You know, if you have samskars, that's very fortunate. But otherwise, without the philosophy, without chanting, there's no question. That's what I was saying, is that this, for the second generation, why not do it? Try to do it right? Or at least better. You know? And then, you know, third generation will be better, right? Third time's a charm, right? You know, So then as it goes, it gets better. So the samskars, then they have their specifics. The samskars are important. Because without the samskars, then how do you purify so that their intelligence, the mind, the senses, all these things work properly? How many people have problems that their health is bad and one of the main things is their digestion? Why is it today being, you know, so health conscious of all the funny foods that they eat? Right? You know, it's just like somehow or another people have been going along and living quite well. But nowadays, without goji berries, how are you going to maintain your health? Or without this from this weird place or that in the Amazon or that superfood over there. Like quinoa, right? That's the local food, you know, of Peruvians. Like that. But now it's the superfood, you know, like this. So you have all these. Why is it there? Because these people don't have good digestion, don't have good health. Why not? You can check. Every last one of them doesn't have the samskars for digestion in that. Right? Like here in Mayapur, I think we have 5,000 devotees registered. Like that. About 2,500 of them are pretty steady. Right? That they're here all the time. Basically, that's the 2,500 Bengalis. Right? And a few of the others, they're steady, they're here. Shanani Vaspankajungri, they've been here for a long time. You know, a few others here and there. But the rest of them, they come and go like the wind, literally. Now, if you check, none of them done the samskars for being stable. Like, you know, there's after birth, there's 3 months that the child and mother stay in the house, don't go out. And then you have nishkrama, where they go out the first time and see the deities. So if you do that samskar, you'll be fixed. You know what I'm saying? So those from a background of samskars, they're from this village, they stay in that village. Why? Because they just stayed there. The modern people, they're always changing. And so therefore, whoever's come to Mayapur, from the, you know, from anywhere outside of Mayapur, and they're living here, sometimes it's their 20th to 30th place they've lived in their time in Krishna consciousness. We're not even counting before Krishna consciousness. That's due to lack of samskar. You understand? So it has effect. It has a benefit. So that's why it's recommended. We can say, oh, but it's not necessary. But the point is who said it's not necessary? You know what I'm saying? Are we the authority? Is our mind the authority? You know? Or is Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra the authority? Right? So we see that those who follow it, they get the benefit. And those who don't, they don't. It's simple. Does that make sense?
In one of the aspects of curriculum, I was having this worry that what should an educationist do to ensure that the child is not trained like a Rishyashringa, where he's raised in a very nice, sattvic, pure environment, and when
right.
he has to face the Kali Yuga.
And how did Rishi Sringa do after he went out, after he graduated? Did he do well? He was the main court. The prime minister of a king, and he had 6 wives. Is he doing okay or not?
Yes.
Is he doing better than anyone in this room? Yes. So what's the problem? It means we say this, but then, okay, you're there in Mumbai and all that. Are there areas in Mumbai that generally you don't go to that are not considered dangerous, that are considered bad? So then why are you living in this kind of, you know, environment? Why aren't you going down there? Why aren't you sending your children there to get that broader experience? You understand? In other words, all it is this is a question coming from your own conditioning. Because outside of your experience, you don't want your child to get more than that. So it's not that it's broader. You're saying, what I'm doing, this is the universal. You know what I'm saying? But someone from another background, their whole experience is completely different. So what we're talking about is creating a human being, not creating somebody from Mumbai who speaks half Hindi, half English. You know what I'm saying? Because that's what it's for.
So my question was regarding what an educationist especially should do while the kids are in Gurukul, so that they can, so to say, be robust.
Yes, but the point is what's robust? You know what I'm saying? Think about it. What makes someone robust? Because everybody's grown up. If you went to the state school, you've grown up with whatever there is. And so what makes the difference between someone who's successful in the modern environment and who's not? Because see, it's like if we were working on the principle that everybody who's grown up in Gurukul can't make it in the world, and everybody who's grown up in the state school, they're all doing fabulous in the world, then this would be a serious question. But when most people that go through the modern educational system can't function in the world, either economically or socially or personally, then what is it that you want to expose them to that will enhance their, you know what I'm saying? Some Patel from some village in Gujarat goes to America, and after, you know, a decade has bought every motel there is between California and New York. Is he doing all right or not? So did he grow up in this modern and all out that and out there with everybody? And no. He grew up in life. He knew how to work, how to do things. The reason he can buy all those motels is because he can work. And the people who went to state school, they don't have any idea how to work or the importance of it. That's why he has the motels, and they stay in the motel and pay him to stay there. And who did he buy the car from? That's another Indian guy. Right? And if you don't have a car, you take a taxi, that's a Bangladeshi. You understand? So the point is, and then that's there. So the Asians, because they grow up in an environment where they are, it's tighter, the environment they're in, more cultural, they do better in the West than the Westerners. So where's the anxiety? People say these things because they can. You know what I'm saying? It's just like Stardust magazine. Is there anything of importance in that magazine from front to back? Nothing. So why is it there? Because they can say it. That's all. It's not important, but they say it, and people think, oh, this is important. So just because people can say things doesn't mean it's important. Oh, but how will they have that experience that says, what experience you have? Who did you move with? Who had, you know. All it is what they're saying. This is the real question. The experience they're growing up in the Gurukul is different than what my experience. So will I be able to relate to them? That's all. Because otherwise, as far as realistically making it in the world, what has it got to do with anything of this? You know, Google was started in a garage. What experience did they have? You grew up in a garage? So at MIT, IIT, they have little garages, and everyone goes into a garage and tries to start a, you know, multinational billion-dollar business in those little garages. You don't? But what's the point of you're so inclusive? You're not getting any experience of the world, the real world, because it all happened in a garage. You know, so did Apple, so did Windows. So, you know, these guys, they were garage people. And you didn't grow up in a garage? You didn't have a garage? My God. You know? How depraved. Oh, well, don't worry. Next life, if you go nicely, then you can be born in the West and you can have a garage. That's the stuff we hear from the Hindus. Yeah, next life you can be born a Hindu and then you can. So these things aren't actually real. The point is that if you don't, anything that's happening, let's say they have a seminar on something, where is that happening? Is it in the workplace? No, it's happening in something removed. It's got bullet points on the board and all that, and there's little drinks over there, and there's, you know, little guys this, and everyone's handing out the little, you know, cards and stuff like that. So is that the real world? No. You understand? So the point is education happens where you step out, and then you can create an environment which is best for that knowledge to be appreciated. That's what it's for. So we got another hour and 10 minutes? Oh, daylight savings time?
10 minutes.
It says 10 to 5. You understand what's there? So all it is that it's different from what we're used to. Right? Now, let us say, for example, okay, you go to the government school. Okay? If you go to grade 1, how old are you?
37.
Huh? 37. Mature student in grade 1.
6 years.
6 years old. How old is everybody else in that classroom? 6 years old. Now when you go into second grade, they're all 7. You go into third grade, they're all 8. You go into fourth grade, they're all 9. You understand? Then there's a time when they're all 13, they're all 14, they're all 15. And so they create their own culture. The secondary education, modern secondary, they have their own culture that doesn't exist anywhere. And when you go out and you graduate from there, is there a situation you'll ever be in your life where everyone will be exactly the same age as you? Never. Same age, same background, same everything. Because you're there, it's everybody from that neighborhood, like that, in the same age. So you don't know how to deal with people of a different age. You don't have no idea. So is that a reality or not? Well, in the Gurukul, you're there, you're 6 years old, but you know, there's other kids there that are 15 that are 30. And they're all there doing sweeping and this and that. They're all cooking, they're all doing these things together. That's more real. So now, in reality, which is the one that has an artificial environment? Yeah. So it's not that, oh, it's separated. You have to separate. Otherwise, how do you study? Right? If distractions are going on, you know, if the cricket match is going on the television, are you going to be able to do your math? Not a trick question. No, you'll watch the cricket. So anything's going on, you'll watch that. But here, then you can get that training, and then once you have the training, then you apply it. But because in the modern society, there is no training. Therefore, they think you don't require it. That's the illusion. All the problems they're having in society, most of those wouldn't be there if they were trained. Does that make sense? There's something on this side? Yes.
What is the best way to learn and absorb this knowledge?
What's the best way to learn and absorb this knowledge?
Yeah, for one who is coming from the Rajas and Tamas culture from the West in the mid-20s.
Okay, so when it's, you know, older and coming from the, it's the same system. The system, the Gurukul system, is association. Just like you learn in the home before you're up to 5, by association, because the parents are always with you. But as you get older, they can't always be with you, but teachers, then they can. So it's the same system. It's by association. So if you're associating with those who understand the culture and the philosophy, then they can train you in that culture and philosophy. So it's not different. It doesn't matter the age. It's just when you're younger, it's easier. Because you don't have any specific habits and you don't have a specific identity like this. As you get older, you have, so then you have to work with that. Does that make sense? You know, when you're younger, you train them according to what propensities are there. When you're older, you train them according to the inherent nature. But in any case, it's always association. So the spiritual, we see Rupa Goswami mentions, associating with like-minded people that are more advanced. Okay. Anything else?
Such thing as you born in horoscope of Lakshasa, you born in the horoscope of Anona Deva, you know, then you have a different personality. Then you can be trained properly at a young age.
So I'm not quite sure I get
the horoscope say, oh, my child born in as a like a Lakshasa, like that.
Rakshasa means those different things. You have Rakshasa, Manusha, and Daiva. That simply means the environment you like to be in. Some are from Manusha, from Daiva, they like the environment always clean and tidy. Right? Rakshasa means they couldn't care less. And Manusha means they like it clean and then they'll make it a mess. And then they'll clean it up again and then they'll make it a mess. Right? You make everything nice, put all the pillows right, make everything perfect, and then you'll use it and make it into a total mess. So it'll start off looking Daiva, and by the end of the day, it'll look Rakshasa. Then you'll make it back. That's Manusha. So it's just a matter of how you like to keep things. That's why that's important for marriage. When you're looking at the charts for a school, then you're looking at how do they work with authority, their acceptance of authority, the religious nature. That's what you look at. Rakshasa and that, you look at they should be the same. Because if husband and wife are both slobs, it works fine. Or they're both very clean, or they're both, that's that. But if one's Daiva and one's Rakshasa, it's never going to work.
So in Puruku, it's more of the respect to authority and follow authority, not about the nature.
Those things is you're trained how to be clean, how to be that, because all these things, cleanliness, these things are all part of human training. So you're trained in that, and then you'll apply that to whatever is your level. So of the Rakshasas, you'll be the cleanest Rakshasa. Yes.
When you were talking about the system of training, about like 14 branches of knowledge and the location of them,
yes.
I'm just wondering whether this whole is good for like the body and the nose, or
is it? It works for both. It's just that the environment in which they are is different from the girls. They need more variety. Like the boys will do less classes in a day with more focus on it because it takes longer for them to focus. While the girls, they'll do more subjects in a day that are shorter, so there's more variety because they focus the shorter it is. The longer it is, then they lose interest. They get bored. Does that make sense? And then what you do in the different days, there's more variety with the girls, while the boy, the more it's the same, then the more they get fixed in the regularity. They're taught the same thing. It's just the environment in which they're doing, the schedules they're doing it. The boys, it has to be more of a monastic, austere environment, because otherwise they don't notice anything. While the girls, it has to be like a home environment. That's all. But otherwise, the same thing.
And the children that born with short attention cannot be in one place for long time.
So that's why there's so much activity in all that. By doing that, they get purified, and then slowly they can pay attention.
So that means no problem with that short memory? Or
it's not a problem as long as they have some character. Because it's about character training. These other things, as they don't do, then they don't focus on those things much. But much of that is because there's so much going on in the world. Well, if there's less going on, they can focus better. And once you learn to focus, then you can focus when you're in an environment when so much stuff is there. Does that make sense?
So actually, it's not a problem at all. When you come to Gurukul, you can...
It means it'll be a bit of a problem, but it won't be so much. It'll be less problem in Gurukul. Because there's more activity, more like that. Half the time is spent for training, and half the time is spent for the cultural aspects. Yes, but that's why they do different things. And so then they may stay in a system in which it works for them. But if it's too much, they can't pay any attention at all, they can't do anything, then they won't be suitable until they mature more. But if there's some character that they can at least focus a bit, then they can be involved. Because the Vedic system can deal with all these things, because they're just imbalances in the mucus, the bile, in the air, or in the, what is it, the an imbalance. You know, you have earth, water, fire, air, and ether. So the body is made of that. So if they have an imbalance in any one of those, then it comes out as things like this. So there's certain activities, you do those, you focus on those, you do more of that, it'll balance that, so it'll make everything work. So that's part of the initial when they come in, is seeing that and then therefore making their schedule so that it accommodates that aspect. Does that make sense? So all the different things that we do in the school, they're all balance all these things. So if something you need to do more, then you focus on that. Does that make sense? And then if that works, good, and if it doesn't, then better try later.
Do you have a system that this year you perform well, you can move to the next level? And if
it's not about a year. You move as you move. That will be discussed in detail more, is that you move at the speed you move. So the curriculum's there. Some kid might go through it in 3 years. Some kid might go through it in 1 year. It doesn't matter. You just go through it. So there is no years. It means we have the equivalency of the knowledge of all those years, but it's not in years. So, yes. You wanted to say something?
Just brief announcement. Again, we thank all of you to come here. Very simple environment, but very auspicious. We encourage you to come all the days. The program was organized in such a way that we're going to have the three Sambandha, Vidya, Prayojana, the knowledge, contemplation, and realization. So we encourage you to come for tomorrow's morning session, evening session. Actually, the 4 days. I know many of you have other duties to do, but as much as you can come, you are most welcome. And we have some books there. Those want to acquire some books. And we thank Maharaj for that.
And here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura.